The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. So I had a look at the point that we discussed yesterday about why South Africa is included on the red list for people, the black list actually, for people not allowed to visit from Israel, and indeed a very, very strong limit on people coming in from South Africa. And the Ministry of Health has set down two main criteria to assess which countries go onto which lists. The two criteria involve the infection rate of people visiting from that country or returning from that country to Israel, the number of people who are infected as a percentage of the total visitors, the total arrivals from that country. That's one criteria. The second criterion is the actual infection rate within that country. Now, given that South Africa has been on the blacklist already for some time, and there are not any number of visitors or arrivals from South Africa that we could include in that particular assessment. So currently, the reason that South Africa remains on the blacklist is simply because of the infection rate within South Africa itself. And there are quite specific measures that have been laid down by the Ministry of Health, which are being used to assess this. I would be happy to share those with you to let you know exactly what those percentages and the numbers are that the Ministry of Health uses to assess countries where there are almost no arrivals or at least that particular category group. So I would be happy to have a go at translating and sharing that with you, and you can feel free to distribute that.
Absolutely.
And in theory, when numbers reduce below the criterion that have been laid down by the Minister of Health, in theory, that country should then come off the blacklist. It's, you know, it's supposed to be an independent scientific assessment, and nothing, no discrimination intended. I think that would be the best way to describe it.
Right. Yeah, if you could do that, that would be great. And then I could certainly share it with our listeners or with anybody who is interested in hearing about it. Let's just talk about Defense Minister Benny Gantz. He's on the way to Paris to meet his French counterpart. And that's, of course, against the backdrop that the French president's phone was hacked by Israeli software. Does this issue justify a special visit? Is it that concerning or tense between the countries?
Well, as a result of the list that was advertised, 50,000 people whose phones apparently had this software loaded on it, the Pegasus software, which is produced by the Israeli company, the Israeli cybersecurity company, NSO, when the French president's name was included on that list, apparently the first thing that he did was he picked and said, "What's going on here?" Now, it's unclear whether that particular call was hacked or not, as part of the hacking on the phone. And in fact, to be honest, even though President Emmanuel Macron's name was on that list of 50,000, it is not clear whether his phone actually was hacked or not. But the fact that his name was on that list drew enough ire from the French president and from the French authorities, the French government, that he immediately called Naftali Bennett, and he complained about the fact that his phone had been exposed, at least, as a result of which it was decided that it would be appropriate for Defense Minister Benny Gantz to travel today to Paris. He will meet with his French counterpart, Florence Parly, who is the minister in charge of the French National Forces. I think that's the official title Florence Parly has. But officially, according to the agenda, Benny Gantz is traveling to Paris to discuss events in Lebanon, as well as issues relating to Iran, because we can always add that to the agenda of any discussion that goes on between any member of the Israeli government somebody around the world. That's always a relevant topic. And also this issue of NSO and Pegasus in particular, which can hack into mobile phones without the user knowing about it. It allows the controller to read messages, to track a user's location, to tap into their camera, into their microphone, into their contacts list. The person whose phone has been tapped into has absolutely no awareness of it, and they have no need to download any software or to open a particular message. It is a very, very strong, powerful piece of software that can be loaded onto people's phones. And of course, there is also internal investigation into the use of Pegasus software to determine whether it has been used in a way that it is not authorized. Now, we do know that pieces of software that are as powerful as this have to be sold under the auspices of the Ministry of Defense. They have to have a license. Every single sale to each country has to be authorized by the Ministry of Defense. And we do understand that quite a lengthy list of countries were authorized to use the software, or at least to have the software sold to them by NSO. So there will be an internal investigation to determine whether any of the license conditions that were laid down by the Ministry of Defense to NSO have been breached and have been transgressed. We will find that out. Or maybe we won't find it out, but at least there will be an internal investigation that will be implemented. But in the meantime, apparently it has had something of a detrimental effect on the relations between the French and Israeli governments. And as a result of that, Benny Gantz has been dispatched to Paris to try and sort it out. I presume he will also talk about the other issues. The state of things in Lebanon is very, very worrying indeed. Of course, there is even some people talking about a humanitarian crisis that is building up in Lebanon as a result of the events there. And that would be very concerning for Israel. Of course, Israel-Lebanon share a border. And the last thing that Israel would like on its northern border is to have a crisis going on in Lebanon. There seems to be a significant lack of government control of the situation there. A situation which is building in the country, which is very, very undesirable. So France has a very strong influence over the events in Lebanon, and I guess that the Israeli government will be calling upon the French government to try to intervene to prevent that budding crisis that we sense is happening in Lebanon as well.
A very, very concerning situation there. The Knesset has yesterday approved the terms of the Lapid-Bennett rotation agreement. I didn't realize it needed to be passed by the Knesset.
So it does need to be passed by the Knesset simply because it requires a change to Israel's basic law to allow a rotation of prime minister within a single term of office. The basic law is Israel's equivalent of a constitution, because we don't have a constitution. This basic law really acts in the sense in place of a constitution, and that basic law needed to be amended in order to accommodate this particular rotation. As it turns out, the amendment to the basic law was passed by a majority of 61 members of Knesset after a 15-hour debate. And there were only two members of Knesset who actually voted against this, which is a little surprising, because one would imagine that there would be a very, very strong negative vote, because, of course, this is something which is part of the coalition agreement, and the opposition would be expected to vote strongly against it in the event the opposition actually even left the chamber. And I think that there's quite a lot that lies behind this. The opposition were arguing initially about technical issues rather than voting on the substance of what was being proposed. The opposition claimed that the coalition had actually exceeded the quota of the number of votes that were agreed upon in the Knesset committee as part of the implementation of Section 98, which sets out the rules of procedure. And as a result of that, most of the opposition were not even present for the vote. Now, I think that really says something else. It doesn't say much about these technical issues. It says that the opposition understood that they had no way of preventing this vote from being passed when they could see that 61 members of Knesset were lined up to vote in favor. They had no alternative but to try to fight against this from a technical perspective rather than fighting on the substance of things. And once it was clear that they had absolutely no chance of preventing this passage, the passage of this bill from being passed, they would rather leave the hall and not be present when the vote is held than be shown to be defeated by the 61 members of Knesset who were lined up to vote for it. So that's the way that I interpret those events that took place yesterday. A very, very lengthy debate. Lots and lots of technical issues being raised about how many votes you can hold and how many votes you can't hold as part of the changes in the implementation of the coalition agreement. In the end, the law was passed and we are now set for a prime ministerial rotation, which is due to take place in September of 2023, at which point Yair Lapid will assume the role as prime minister. He currently serves as foreign minister, and I understand that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett will then exchange with him and serve as foreign minister while Yair Lapid takes on the role as prime minister. It's going to be very fascinating to see whether that rotation takes place smoothly according to the plans or whether it might be torpedoed, as has been the case in previous years, when rotation agreements were signed. And then when the rotation moment comes, then of course the peace person is being rotated out, doesn't necessarily want to see themselves demoted down the scale. And so they rather bring the government down and force another election. That at least has been the case in previous situations when rotation was relevant. So it'll be interesting to see whether Naftali Bennett will be willing to be rotated down to be foreign minister as opposed to being prime minister. Let's just bear in mind that as part of the current coalition agreement, even though Yair Lapid is not prime minister, he is officially alternate prime minister and minister of defense, but he has a certain veto right on certain government decisions even now in his position where he is not prime minister, but he has certain veto right over certain prime ministerial decisions which are being made. And that seems at least to be working because we don't hear about any issues that have arisen, any fights that have taken place between
It actually seems quite smooth. In fact, the whole coalition, and maybe we're not hearing it, but you're certainly not seeing this discord that we perhaps expected or anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly an element of discord, and we saw it in some of the votes where a free vote was allowed, and of course, in particular, the Ram Arab Party was found fit to vote against some of the proposals that were being made by the government. But I agree with you that on a day-to-day basis, and I think I mentioned it last week or the week before, on a day-to-day basis, the government really seems to be functioning. There seems to be quiet. There seems to be just getting on with business rather than, fighting over emotional issues, which we saw so much of in the previous government. People are just getting on with the business to hand. There's a lot to be done. A national budget still needs to be passed. That is upcoming. That will definitely test the coalition because everybody will want their piece of the budget. And to the extent that members of the coalition don't get what they want for their special interest groups, they are likely to vote against the budget or at least not support it. And the budget is a vote of confidence in the government. In other words, if the budget does not pass, that is a reason for the government to resign and for new elections to take place.
The Ministry of Health has approved the vaccination of children aged 5 to 11, but specifically those who are considered to be high-risk groups. Has the vaccine been approved for the use by children? Where are we with this?
Not yet. Not yet. Officially, both Pfizer and Moderna, whose vaccines are being used in Israel at the moment, are currently holding clinical trials to determine the safety and efficacy of the vaccine in children aged 5 to 11. The US federal regulators apparently have urged the companies to expand the size of the test group as a precautionary measure to try to detect rare adverse effects. This is according to the New York Times. But in the meantime, the Ministry of Health in Israel put out a directive yesterday saying that as of next week on Sunday, children aged 5 to 11 will be allowed to be vaccinated. But they are going to be only addressing very, very, very specific groups of children, those who suffer from morbid obesity, those who have neurodevelopmental disorders, those who suffer from severe immunosuppression, acute chronic lung diseases, heart failure, pulmonary arterial hypertension. Those groups of children will be at least allowed to be vaccinated. Whether they will actually take up on this vaccination remains to be seen, but they are considered to be in such a high-risk category that it is preferable to vaccinate them and to prevent them from contracting COVID, and in particular being subject to long COVID, rather than waiting for the U.S. authorities to formally approve use of the vaccine in children of that age category. So it is definitely an interesting development. And just another step which confirms that as far as Israel is concerned, and so many different clinical studies have been taking place, and so many statistics have now been published about the efficacy of the vaccine, and you know, amongst various groups, age groups, groups suffering from different pre-existing conditions. There is so much information that's available now, and all information points to the fact that getting vaccinated is really the answer to getting the show back on the road. There can be no doubt at all that, you know, if Israel is considered to be a test lab for vaccinations, the efficacy of vaccinations, the logic, the risks associated with various vaccinations, then the test results show that everybody should get vaccinated as soon as possible.
Absolutely right. Couldn't say it better myself. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, 7:45.